On October 6, 1993, journalists ready to cover the sports story of the year gathered at the Chicago Bulls training facility. They had heard rumors that Michael Jordan was going to make a huge announcement.
Reporters set up their cameras, adjusted their earpieces, and reviewed their notes. And then Jordan walked out and took a seat at the press table alongside his coach and other NBA officials. One journalist compared the tableau to Jesus's Last Supper.
Once the team owner finished his speech, Jordan confirmed what everyone feared. After making history with three championship wins in a row, Michael Jordan was retiring.
Jordan claimed he simply didn't have the drive anymore. He'd fulfilled his obligation to himself, his team, and the city of Chicago. There were no more peaks to conquer.
But his statement rang disingenuous to many of his fans. This was a player who'd put on 15 pounds of muscle during one offseason just to play more aggressively. Someone that intense didn't just give up. There had to be another reason.
Admittedly, by that point, Jordan's personal life had become an ongoing public story. From reports of a dangerous gambling habit that left him millions of dollars in debt, to his family grieving the murder of their father, James.
The sudden decision seemed like something was off with Jordan. The best player on the most dominant team in the NBA didn't just walk away, unless he was forced to retire.
Welcome to Conspiracy Theories, a Spotify original from Parcast. Every Monday and Wednesday, we dig into the complicated stories behind the world's most controversial events and search for the truth. I'm Carter Roy.
And I'm Molly Brandenburg.
And neither of us are conspiracy theorists.
But we are open-minded, skeptical, and curious. Don't get us wrong. Sometimes the official version is the truth.
But sometimes it's not.
You can find episodes of Conspiracy Theories and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is our second of two episodes on NBA conspiracy theories. Today we'll be covering Michael Jordan's decision to retire from the NBA in 1993. It was a shocking move made during one of the most controversial times in his life. And while Jordan claimed that he was retiring of his own free will, many still suspect there were other forces at play.
In this episode, we'll take a look at the lesser-known angles of Michael Jordan. We'll analyze his extremely competitive nature and how it may have negatively impacted his personal life.
Then, we'll dive into three conspiracy theories about his retirement, like whether or not his father's murder forced him out of the game, or if leaving was a cover-up for an 18-month suspension. We'll also examine if Jordan quit the game simply because the pressure became too much to bear.
We have all that and more coming up. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix. There's one thing we can all agree on. Dealing with pests is a pain. But luckily, Terminix can help. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast. So if your home or business has pests, don't stress it, Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's T-E-R-M-I-N-I-X.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
If you're interested in crazy stories from the wild world of organized crime, scams, gangs, cartels, mafias, drug dealers, and everything fun like that, have we got a podcast for you. The Underworld podcast is hosted by two conflict journalists, Danny Gold and Sean Williams, who have reported on all sorts of dangerous people in dangerous places. Every week, they bring you a new episode on international organized crime from a new corner of the globe. You can find the Underworld podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
From a very young age, Michael Jordan's intense competitive nature was on full display. If his two older brothers excelled at something, Jordan did everything in his power to surpass them.
Their father, James, noticed his budding athletic skills early on. James encouraged his son to play baseball in elementary school and then basketball in high school. And while his aggressive tendencies fueled his performance and helped his teams win, it also got Jordan in a lot of trouble as a teenager.
After getting suspended three times in the ninth grade, he was pulled aside by James. He told his son that if he kept acting out, he could forget about ever going pro. Jordan took his father's advice to heart and shaped up from there.
Or, at the very least, he behaved when he needed to, because as he got older, he blew off steam by indulging in certain vices, especially gambling.
Jordan's first recorded wager took place in high school. Allegedly, he boasted in a letter to his prom date about a bet he'd won.
And when he started playing basketball for the University of North Carolina in 1981, his passion for gambling only grew. He never bet on the games themselves, but he was more than happy to wager against his teammates and coaches during the drills.
Back then, Jordan's wagers were pretty meager. Like many college students, he couldn't risk losing all the money his parents gave him for books and food.
But his frugality only lasted for a few years, because in 1984, Jordan signed a contract that would change his life forever. 7 years with the Chicago Bulls worth $6.3 million. With that kind of money, he now had more freedom to bet big and win big.
One of Jordan's favorite pastimes became betting on the results of the Jumbotron. During team huddles and commercial breaks, stadiums showed cartoon races or puzzles on the giant screens for the guests' entertainment. And Jordan was always putting a couple bucks on the projected winner.
The catch was, these games were scripted, and a few stadium staff members knew who the winner would be each time. Jordan covertly gathered the results ahead of time and then bet against unknowing participants, like the stadium security guards who undoubtedly made a much lower salary.
But his bets extended even further beyond the court. Once, when the Bulls were waiting for their luggage at an airport, Jordan bet his teammates $100 that his bags would come out first. To everyone's disbelief, he won.
Again, this only happened because Jordan had bribed the baggage carriers to put his luggage on the belt first. Now, Jordan wasn't just gambling. In one sense, he'd become a con artist, gaming the system.
Yet these $100 bets were nothing compared to the other bets Jordan made. As an avid golfer, he sometimes wagered $1,000 a hole against other wealthy players. This behavior got him mixed up with some unsavory characters, like James Bowler.
Bowler and Jordan met at a country club in North Carolina in 1986, and the two instantly hit it off. Bowler made his living in the high-stakes world of golf hustling. He was paid by wealthy gamblers to play golf. Sometimes these people would wager up to $700,000 for Bowler to win. And if he succeeded, he'd walk away with a cut of his employer's proceeds.
Golf gambling was a business as lucrative as it was secretive. Bowler rarely knew much about who'd hired him. Most people in the business had a road name like Texas Shorty or Big Daddy. Chances are, they never even met face to face.
We aren't entirely sure what details, if any, Jordan knew about Bowler's murky occupation. But the two golfed together so often, in a non-competitive setting, that it would be strange if it never came up. All told, they played together roughly 50 times over the course of their five-year friendship from 1986 to 1991.
Still, it's likely that Bowler kept some of his life private from Jordan, like his criminal record. By 1992, Bowler had been convicted 3 times for drug-related offenses. But allegedly, this never came up in their conversations, and apparently, the two men simply continued to play golf.
A typical round consists of 18 holes, but that wasn't enough to satisfy Jordan or Bowler. The duo usually played 27 holes on any given day. Then they'd return to Jordan's place in the evening and play poker late into the night.
Jordan was a skilled golfer and card player, but so were the people he played against, meaning he often lost large sums of money. One particular game cost him $20,000.
And that was on the low end. In late 1991, Jordan went on a 5-day golfing streak. During this bender, he lost $57,000 to Bowler and a total of $100,000 to the other golfers who joined them.
These participants, like Bowler, were people very much outside of the basketball world. One was named Eddie Dow, and while he wasn't a convicted criminal, he certainly associated with them. During several investigations, Dow's name allegedly came up as a money launderer, financier, or accessory to a crime.
By day, Dow was a bail bondsman. By night, he ran a few small nightclubs. He always carried upwards of $10,000 cash on his person, along with a revolver.
As far as we can tell, he never threatened Jordan with it to pay up. By this point, Jordan's salary was around $5 million a year, so he seemed to be good for the money. In fact, Dow had received checks from Jordan.
On February 19, 1992, Dow was walking to his car when 4 men gunned him down. They broke open his briefcase and stole $20,000 in cash. But they left copies of 3 checks from Jordan for his debts, totaling $108,000.
Oddly, James Bowler was also in possession of at least 1 check with Jordan's name on it. Federal authorities had been investigating him for tax evasion and drug trafficking, so they seized his payments. Allegedly, he'd been carrying cash and cocaine for a local kingpin.
Bowler tried to dodge further investigation by saying Jordan gave him 1 check as a non-taxable loan to construct a driving range. And when the media went to Jordan, he confirmed Bowler's lie.
But when Jordan was later called to testify about the check in court, he changed his story. He admitted that the money was for a gambling debt. He said he'd lied to save himself the embarrassment.
Since Jordan wasn't under oath during the lie, he was released with no repercussions.
Though Jordan didn't face any legal consequences, the incident with Bowler turned heads. The Bulls star was still investigated for his conduct by the NBA. After their inquiry, the league also came to the conclusion that he'd done nothing wrong.
Likely because there were essentially 2 rules in the NBA about gambling at that time. One, athletes weren't allowed to bet on professional games. And 2, they weren't allowed to do anything that would dishonor the organization. The NBA's only demand following the inquiry was that Jordan cut ties with Bowler and other high-stakes gamblers, which he did.
The media, though, wasn't as forgiving to Jordan's beloved reputation. After the investigation, the press started to speculate that he had an addiction and constantly grilled him on his gambling.
After about a year, by 1993, the questions finally died down. It looked like Jordan was back to being the NBA's sweetheart, likely because the Bulls were on their way to a 3rd consecutive championship. This had only been achieved by 2 other basketball teams in history: the Lakers, when they were based in Minneapolis, and the Boston Celtics.
On June 19, 1993, the Bulls beat the Phoenix Suns in Game 6 of the Finals. As the team celebrated their hard-earned victory, even Jordan's parents were on the court beside him, talking to reporters and shaking hands.
But the thrill of victory was short-lived. Soon, Jordan would face a new slew of accusations. Another golfing friend named Richard Esquinas published a book titled Michael and Me, Our Gambling Addiction, My Cry for Help. In it, Esquinas claimed that he'd also gone on a gambling bender with Jordan around 1991.
But this one didn't last for 5 days. It lasted for 10. And apparently, it had cost Jordan $1.25 million. According to Esquinas, Jordan later reduced his debt to approximately $900,000 in a different golf match. And Esquinas reportedly went even further, letting Jordan settle the debt for $300,000. But he claimed that Jordan only paid back a fraction, $200,000. This revelation sent the media into another frenzy, forcing the NBA to investigate Jordan yet again.
And like the first scandal, the NBA would ultimately decide that Jordan hadn't done anything wrong. He certainly gambled a lot of money, but officials couldn't condemn him for that.
With his name soon to be cleared once more and 3 championships under his belt, Jordan's future looked bright.
But that turned to dust in a shocking turn of events. On July 23, 1993, just over 4 weeks after the championship, his father and closest confidant, James Jordan, was murdered.
Coming up, the alleged connection between Jordan's gambling and his father's homicide.
Hi, listeners. It's Carter from Parcast, and I am thrilled to tell you about a new limited series I'm hosting just in time for Father's Day. It's called Devious Dads, and it introduces you to some of the most feared, fraudulent, and fatal fathers in history. Every Sunday on Spotify, discover the men who started out as role models and ended up becoming real-life criminals, like Wall Street financier Bernie Madoff, whose billion-dollar Ponzi scheme destroyed countless families, including his own, or Marvin Gaye Sr., whose envy and resentment towards his son's successful music career drove him to murder. Each episode of Devious Dads has been handpicked from shows across the Parcast network, shining a light on the men who are far more wicked than wise. This summer, catch a glimpse of the frightening side of fatherhood. Follow the Spotify original from Parcast, Devious Dads. Listen free only on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix. Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life, at least not the ones you're thinking of, but they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home, like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. No matter what type of bug it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control. And with over 95 years of experience, it's no wonder they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere. So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com.
Now, back to the story.
As Michael Jordan's career soared in the early 90s, so did his gambling debts. But despite potentially owing millions to numerous people, Jordan's reputation with the Bulls largely protected him. After 2 investigations, he was cleared of any wrongdoing. But tragedy would soon befall the Jordan family.
At around 2 a.m. on July 23, 1993, 57-year-old James Jordan was driving through Robeson County, North Carolina. Drained after attending a friend's funeral all day, he decided to pull over on a country road to rest. He cracked a window and went to sleep.
Shortly after James dozed off, 17-year-old Larry Demery and 18-year-old Daniel Green spotted his cherry red Lexus. They'd set out that night to perform a series of robberies, and James was a perfect target.
The two agreed on a plan. They'd rob the victim, steal the car, and leave the driver tied up on the side of the road. So Green reached through the cracked window and unlocked the door, just as James awoke. The older Jordan tried to fight off the intruders, but in the midst of the struggle, one of the two assailants fired a shot. Soon, James bled out from the bullet wound in his chest as the two teens watched on in shock.
They then proceeded to push James's body into the passenger seat and sift through his possessions. It wasn't until Green pulled out James's wallet that they realized they'd killed Michael Jordan's father.
The young men spent the next 2 hours driving around in James's car, looking for a place to dispose of his body. They finally settled on Gum Swamp, just over the South Carolina border.
But surprisingly, they didn't do much else to cover up their crime. In fact, not only did they keep James's Lexus for another 3 days, they even made calls to their friends using the car phone.
Obviously, James's disappearance made national headlines, but at first, no one knew that he'd been murdered. It wasn't until 3 weeks later, when a fisherman found his body downstream, that it became a clear homicide.
The Robeson County Sheriff's Department was quick to identify the killers. They soon traced the calls made from James's car phone and released their information to the public.
With nowhere to run, Green and Demery turned themselves in. With a trial inevitable, it seemed to conclude the investigation. But the murder of the father of one of basketball's most famous stars continued to puzzle people. And the events that followed led many to wonder if Michael Jordan was somehow culpable.
This leads us to our first conspiracy theory, that the death of James Jordan was a revenge killing for a debt Michael hadn't paid back.
After Green and Demery were arrested, their motive was still unclear. This led some reporters like Mark Wicker to fill in the blanks. He wrote, quote, "For now, we just know that there is evidence of Michael Jordan's gambling problem, and there is suspicion of his paying problem. His father has been murdered. Coincidence, anyone?"
Other journalists condemned Wicker's unfounded speculation. Most people believe that James was the victim of a random act of violence. When the killers went to court in 1996, both men blamed the other for pulling the trigger. The truth of who really fired the shot was never discovered.
For a judge, that mattered little. Green and Demery were both sentenced to life in prison for first-degree murder. But 6 years after they were sentenced, shocking new revelations turned the entire story on its head.
In 2002, a separate investigation into the Robeson County Sheriff's Department led to the arrest of 22 law enforcement personnel. They were indicted on counts of kidnapping, perjury, drug trafficking, armed robbery, and money laundering. Corruption that had been going on for years. The most shocking revelation, though, was that the department had allegedly been covering up evidence from James Jordan's murder.
Back in 1993, one of the calls that Green and Demery made from James's car phone was to a man named Hubert Larry Deese, which was extremely odd because not only was Deese a convicted drug trafficker, he was also close friends with the man who would become the lead investigator in James's death. On top of that, Deese was the son of a Robeson County sheriff named Hubert Stone.
We aren't sure what was discussed in that call on the night James was murdered, but apparently, Green's lawyers had tried to submit the conversation as evidence during the 1996 trial. They wanted the jury to see that Deese may have been involved in the murder and that his father could have helped cover it up.
But suspiciously, the judge didn't allow Green's defense team to address the call whatsoever. And it's unclear what their reasoning was. If Deese was a part of James's murder, it seems like the evidence would have been critical in bringing him and whoever else may have played a role to justice.
This is pure speculation here, but it feels like the sheriff's deputies and the judges were working together to cover something up. It could have been as simple as it seems, and that Deese was involved in the murder, or it could have been something much more dangerous, like a mob hit.
Allegations that James Jordan's death could have been tied to the mafia surfaced years later. In 2019, a man named Michael Francis was interviewed on a YouTube channel called Vlad TV.
As a member of New York's Colombo crime family from 1975 to the early 90s, Francis was also an expert in sports gambling. He understood exactly how the mafia took control of vulnerable players. According to him, all they had to do was find a young athlete with a gambling debt they couldn't pay back. A mobster would then confront the athlete and give them three choices: either bring the money to them the following day, risk something bad happening to them, or throw the game in the mob's favor.
We can't confirm that this happened to Michael Jordan, but based on Francis's criteria, his gambling habit and increasing debt certainly made him a viable target.
During his Vlad TV interview, Francis also said, quote, "I don't have firsthand knowledge of this, but I was told that Jordan had to leave the NBA around the time that his father got murdered because stories were about to come out. And there was a lot of heat on the fact that because of Michael's gambling habit, his father paid the price and the NBA didn't want the press. So they asked him to leave for a while. That's when he went to play baseball, and then when things settled down, he came back."
That's a powerful statement, specifically the line that says James paid the price for Michael's gambling habit.
To me, it seems like a roundabout way of suggesting that maybe Michael Jordan didn't want to pay up or throw a game, so he rolled the dice, which led to the unfortunate final result, a hit on someone he loved.
But Francis is only implying this could happen, not that it did. He had no evidence to support that this was the case for the Jordans. He merely heard about it secondhand from what he claimed was a reliable source.
What's strange is that Francis sat down with the same interviewer later in the summer of 2020. And this time, he retracted his statement. He said he believed the theory had been debunked and the mafia had nothing to do with James's death. Well, that wavering back and forth could be suspicious. Well, the mob is known for threatening people to keep their mouths shut. It's possible someone scared him into changing his tune.
I'm not so sure. For starters, I don't think Hubert Larry Deese was involved in the killing. Green and Demery may have called him after the fact, but neither ever testified that he was involved. It seems they called a lot of people from James's car phone. And I don't think the mob killed James either. I'm not an expert in how they operate, but killing the father of one of the biggest celebrities in the world seems like an audacious move. The risk of exposure would be way too high. Sadly, I think it was a random act of violence. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being undoubtedly true, I give this theory a 2 out of 10.
Those are great points, but I'm still not convinced that there couldn't be some connection between Michael Jordan and the mob, at least indirectly. Maybe he had ties to them through people like Eddie Dow and James Bowler. And if that's the case, then it's possible Jordan owed the mob money, especially with how frequently he gambled. On top of this, it's hard to trust that the Robeson County Sheriff's Department told the full story. Granted its history of corruption, they easily could have been hiding something. But we can't confirm this, and given the lack of evidence, I too am going to give this theory a 2 out of 10.
So, while it's likely that Michael Jordan wasn't forced into retirement by a criminal organization, another powerful entity may have swayed his decision to do so, like the NBA.
Coming up, how Jordan's gambling threatened the entire sport of basketball. Now, back to the story.
News of Michael Jordan's debt and criminal connections had been circulating for about a year before his father died. It prompted some theorists to wonder if James's murder was a result of some sort of debt his son hadn't paid back. But there simply isn't enough evidence to support this theory.
Even if Jordan's gambling wasn't the cause of his father's murder, it may have led to his premature retirement. This brings us to conspiracy theory number 2. Michael's gambling had grown so serious that the NBA secretly gave him an 18-month suspension.
Let's go back to when Jordan announced that he was leaving the NBA on October 6, 1993. This was about a year after his gambling addiction came to light.
Technically, players were allowed to gamble, but people wondered if the announcement meant Jordan had already taken this allowance a step too far. Some believed he was betting on NBA games or intentionally manipulating them to make a little extra cash.
More specifically, people were concerned that Jordan had been participating in something called point shaving.
This is when gamblers approach a player on the team predicted to win and try to bribe them, similar to what we proposed with the mob theory. While they aren't asking players to lose, the gamblers do need them to miss a few shots so that the score they bet on is more accurate.
It might be hard to see why Jordan, one of the highest paid athletes in the league, would resort to shaving points. It would jeopardize his reputation as an all-star player. But while he was worth a lot, he may not have been liquid enough to cover all the debts he owed.
And if he was pressed enough to start shaving points, it could have devastated the entire National Basketball Association. It would call into question the reputation of other players, undermine its entertainment value, and cost billions in lost revenue.
No one had more to lose from this than the NBA's commissioner, David Stern. At the time, he was working to expand the league's influence overseas. But all of his efforts would have been for nothing if Jordan had bombed on the world stage.
So when Jordan announced his retirement in October 1993, people assumed that Stern had some say in the matter. If the commissioner believed the NBA might suffer embarrassment from Jordan's gambling ties, it's possible that he put Jordan on an 18-month suspension masked as a retirement.
Which makes sense, because some of Jordan's language seemed to hint that Stern had suspended him. When a reporter asked if he would return, Jordan responded, quote, 5 years down the road, if the urge comes back, if the Bulls will have me, if David Stern lets me back in the league, I may come back. It sounded like Jordan was purposely trying to leave the door open for a comeback, if he so chose.
Plenty of other athletes have retired and come back to the NBA, but it's the specificity of calling out the commissioner that's intriguing. If David Stern lets him back in the league. Usually, if an athlete wants to come out of retirement, they don't need anyone's permission. It's mostly just whether a team will give them a contract. So why was it different for Michael Jordan?
One writer for Sports Illustrated named Jack McCallum wanted to know just that. He confronted Stern directly on the matter, asking if Jordan's retirement had anything to do with point shaving or his gambling habit.
Stern fiercely denied having any involvement with Jordan's decision, and to McCallum, it seemed like Stern's overreaction actually supported the idea that he had something to do with Jordan's retirement after all.
But since that conversation, McCallum has since changed his own mind. He says now he actually believes the commissioner wasn't involved.
Although it's possible McCallum only switched his stance because Sports Illustrated pressured him to. As a magazine that makes its livelihood on professional sports, publishing an article questioning the integrity of the NBA commissioner could cause a firestorm.
But before we rank this theory, we should explore our last one, since they do have some overlap. Conspiracy theory number 3 also has to do with why Jordan retired, because some say he was simply burnt out.
During his press conference in October 1993, Jordan didn't explicitly state that he was tired. He told reporters he was content with everything he'd accomplished, but he was ready to try something else.
But some people paid closer attention to how exactly Jordan worded the speech. And while they could tell he was too depleted to muster another season, it wasn't because he was tired of the game itself. It was because he was exhausted by the media.
During his speech, Jordan referred to the press as "you guys" 21 times. To him, they'd become a faceless mass of people bent on ruining his reputation. He'd entered the league as a blameless rookie and maintained that image for almost a decade. But after a few years on the pedestal, the public craved something more scandalous.
The conjecture that lingered about his father's death was painful, and Jordan was fed up with it. He called reporting on James's murder salt in his open wound.
And even if reporters weren't writing about his father, they were asking him about his gambling addiction, his aggressive behavior toward his teammates, or other personal matters.
The media attention was so bad that even his opponents defended him. Magic Johnson, who had played for the Los Angeles Lakers, told the press they were going to chase Jordan out of the game if they pushed any harder. But they may not have been the only thing that drove Jordan away from basketball.
Just before the 1993 season, Jordan told a close friend that he was planning to shock the world by quitting basketball to play professional baseball.
He'd grown up in the sport, but quit when he was 18 years old to pursue basketball. And as famous as he was in the NBA, Jordan told his friend he would have left the Bulls right after the 92 season. The only thing keeping him was the drive to win his third championship in a row. No one else in his generation had done that, and he wanted to be the first.
But he kept his desire to change sports quiet, only within the family. In fact, it was the last thing he discussed with his father before he died. James actually encouraged him to go after it.
It seems like Jordan had been wanting to make the move for at least a year, maybe even longer, which makes it all the more odd that he didn't mention it during his press conference. Clarifying why he was retiring would have answered a lot of questions.
Knowing that he was sitting on hopes to play baseball, I give conspiracy theory number two, that Michael Jordan's retirement was an extended suspension, a 2 out of 10. I don't believe Commissioner Stern forced him out, though the increased scrutiny from the league probably influenced Jordan's decision to leave. And this makes me more willing to buy conspiracy theory number three, that Jordan retired because he was burnt out. I'll give that an 8 out of 10.
I don't think Michael Jordan was forced out by anyone or anything, not even the pressure. He was a powerhouse in the NBA and a huge moneymaker for them. If he was point shaving and the truth came out, the NBA could likely deal with the fallout and move past it. I have to give conspiracy theory number two a 3 out of 10. And similarly, I'm more inclined to believe theory number three. Achieving as much as Jordan did takes an inhuman amount of physical and mental effort. Compounded with all the drama in the media, it makes way more sense that Jordan was just burnt out or ready to move on to something else. I give this theory a 7 out of 10.
Ultimately, there were various personal and professional reasons for Jordan's decision. We can't know what was going through his head at the time, beyond what's already been reported, but I have a feeling that something deeper and more emotional drove him to retire.
You may be right. Jordan was obsessed with winning when it came to the NBA. Basketball was forever tied to his fame and fortune. But playing baseball had sentimental value. It could have been that Jordan's retirement was his way of stepping back and honoring the last memory he'd shared with his father.
Thanks for tuning in to Conspiracy Theories. We'll be back next time for a new episode. For more information on the topic, we found the Last Dance documentary directed by Jason Ayer helpful in our research.
You can find all episodes of Conspiracy Theories and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify.
Until then, remember, the truth isn't always the best story.
And the official story isn't always the truth.
Conspiracy Theories is a Spotify original from Parcast. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Russell Nash, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Trent Williamson, Carly Madden, and Freddie Beckley. This episode of Conspiracy Theories was written by Rob Heckert, with writing assistance by Allie Wicker, fact-checking by Bennett Logan, and research by Bradley Klein. Conspiracy Theory stars Molly Brandenburg and Carter Roy. Hey there, Carter again. As we close out, here's a reminder to check out my new Parcast limited series, Devious Dads. For 10 weeks, we're exposing the men who were far more flawed than fatherly, ruining anyone who stood in their way, even their own families. Follow Devious Dads free only on Spotify.